Hello and welcome to the latest podcast from the German Institute for International and Security Affairs here in Berlin, or SWP. It's January 28th, 2021, and while the world has been focusing on the pandemic, another crisis in Europe is getting a lot less attention: the plight of refugees and migrants in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Hundreds of people have been living in appalling and freezing conditions after a refugee camp burnt down, and thousands are stuck in limbo waiting near the Bosnian border to Croatia, which they see as their path into the EU. So today we are asking, how can Europe solve this particular humanitarian crisis in Bosnia, and what could a more long-term solution look like? I'm Damian McGuinness, Berlin correspondent for the BBC, and joining me today to answer those questions, we have three esteemed migration experts. Peter van der Oerat is from the UN Migration Agency, IOM. He is the outgoing Western Balkans coordinator and IOM representative in Bosnia-Herzegovina, where he's been based for the past 4 years. Today, he joins us from Sarajevo. Thanks for finding the time for us, Peter.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And we're also joined today by Nadine Bieler, who is an associate at SWP here in Berlin. In a COVID-safe, socially distanced manner, she also joins us down the line from elsewhere in the city. Nadine has previously worked abroad for the German development agency GIZ, and today researches refugee issues and development policy. Great you could join us today, Nadine.
Happy to be here.
And joining us from Belgium is the head of the SWP Brussels office, Dr. Dusan Relic, who is the Institute's specialist for Southeast Europe and who previously was for many years a journalist and foreign correspondent, both in the Balkans and elsewhere in Europe. Nice to have you here too, Dusan.
Hello to everyone.
So before we talk solutions, let's have a look in more detail then at the situation on the ground right now. I'd like you to tell me, really, what are the conditions for people there at the moment? So in other words, in what ways is this really a humanitarian crisis that we're talking about right now? Peter, you're there, so maybe you start.
Sure. There's about 8,500 people, migrants and refugees, in Bosnia-Herzegovina at the moment. Out of those, around 6,000 are in official accommodation centers where they have access to basic humanitarian assistance, where they are living in winterized accommodation. And there is really no humanitarian issue at the moment. We have a second group, however, which is living in much more precarious circumstances. And there we can distinguish, if you want, two subgroups. First, there's about 800 to 900 people that are living in a provisional camp, LIPA, which was established by the BIH authorities, where people are living in winterized army tents, where conditions are, I would say, very basic, but at least people are sheltered from the quite extreme weather conditions that we're currently facing there. They have access to food, access to basic health care, and they receive also non-food items. Our biggest concern at the moment, however, is the approximately 1,500 migrants and refugees that are squatting outside in Unasana Canton. They're squatting outside either in makeshift camps in forests or in abandoned buildings mostly around the city of Bihać and Velika Kladuša. And while these people are receiving humanitarian assistance from IOM, from the Danish Refugee Council, including food, they don't have access to the most basic of assistance, which is appropriate shelter for the winter. And those people are sleeping in very harsh conditions. And of course, we are worried about their deteriorating health situation and also the mental toll that the situation is having on them. So that is, in a nutshell, if you like, where we are in Bosnia-Herzegovina. So I would say that, yes, we do have a humanitarian crisis, specifically for those 1,500 people or estimated 1,500 people that are sleeping rough in Unasana Canton.
Okay, that's a good overview. Thank you, Peter. So we got the humanitarian crisis in that region in particular, and then we've got the broader crisis in Bosnia-Herzegovina in general, which we'll talk about in a minute. But first of all, tell me, who are the people there? Who are the refugees and migrants in Bosnia right now?
It's a rather mixed group of people, of people who are possibly labor migrants or would rather be labor migrants, and also people who are refugees, that is to say, people who are looking for asylum. and would like to go to the European Union to apply for asylum. But at the moment, they cannot. And this is why they are stuck in these horrible conditions.
Most of the people that are in Bosnia-Herzegovina are not coming from refugee-producing countries. The biggest nationalities are Pakistani nationals, Bangladeshi nationals, people from North Africa. And then we have people from Afghanistan, where, of course, refugees do come from, and from Iraq, and then a number of nationalities that are smaller in terms of the numbers. When it comes to the makeup of the population, you're looking at a population, 80% are single males between 18 and 40, 45 years old. And the remainders are families and with a relatively small number of unaccompanied children, which are usually adolescent boys between 16 and 18 years old. So that's been for the longest time. I think the nationalities have changed a little bit, but that is the type of population that we have. It's important to highlight that in the sense that there's two elements there that are important, I think, in terms of the makeup. First, it is very clear that one of the key drivers for those people to transit through Bosnia-Herzegovina and to undertake the migration route generally coming from their home country is economical and often obviously poverty and difficult living circumstances back at home. But also for the people that are actually potentially in need of international protection within Europe, the reason why they're transiting to Bosnia is often economical, in the sense that all of them have already been in the European Union. I would say 95% in Greece, maybe 5% in Bulgaria. And they decide to move on from Greece in Bulgaria for a number of reasons. But one reason when you speak to people is often that they find or that they hope that they will have better economical circumstances in the countries where they would like to go. So they have been in the EU, but they decide to move away from Greece to, and then where they want to go, that we can maybe discuss later, but that depends on the nationality. But so very much economy and trying to gain money for the family back home or for the family that is with them is one of the main drivers why people continue to choose this this movement from Greece to elsewhere in the EU.
Let me first pick up something that Peter just now said, that these people have been in the EU before in Greece and in Bulgaria, and their intention is to go further north of the EU, mostly to Germany. However, why are they in Bosnia? Why would they decide to pick up the most difficult route through the terrible mountains of Bosnia and not go through the flatlands of Serbia, Croatia, or Hungary? The reason is simply that Croatia and Hungary have sealed off their borders and have actually pushed the migration flow into the mountains of Bosnia. So this is not a humanitarian catastrophe that has come out of nothing. It's a result of decisions made by EU countries. Also, Croatia has been very much engaged in pushing back the refugees and their reports by humanitarian organizations and also inquiries by the European Commission about the behavior of the Croatian police, border police, which has often been seen by force sending them back to Bosnia-Herzegovina and partly also to Serbia.
Yeah, I think there's a few things there. I think, first of all, I think we have to be mindful that it's not the case that everyone wants to actually actively seek asylum in any EU country. For example, when you talk to the Pakistanis and the Bangladeshis, they know very well that they will not obtain, unless they have very particular individual circumstances, but that the likelihood for them to obtain international protection in any country in Europe is extremely low to non-existent. And they have no intention actually of doing that. What their intention is to, and the Pakistanis and the Bangladeshis mostly want to go to Italy because of existing connections there and access to the grey labour market, they want to go and work without drawing attention to their presence of the authorities, for example, by seeking asylum. So there's a lot of people that, at least when they're in Bosnia, when you talk to them, who will say that they have no intention of seeking asylum in the country of destination where they want. And while there have been a lot of pushbacks by Croatia, as we've already mentioned, there's also another reality. The reality is also that the border between Bosnia-Herzegovina, Croatia, Slovenia, Italy has been fairly open. We've received about 70,000 people since January 2018 in Bosnia. There's about 8,500 left today. All these other people managed to get through, which is exactly the reason why, despite the geographical difficulties and despite the risks of pushbacks from Croatia, people keep on coming because they do know it's a route that is difficult, but still possible to get to their preferred destination country.
As the situation is now, to seek asylum is pretty much the only legal way to get into the European Union. There are no legal pathways for particularly low-skilled migrants from other parts of the world. So they do not stand much of a chance, actually, to get asylum, but that's their only option.
But there has been financial support from Germany and the EU, but despite that, there's still a lot of discontent, really, in the West Balkans about how the EU and Germany have acted when it comes to migration. Dusan, why is this in particular?
The issue of migration is closely connected to nationalism and right-wing xenophobia, which is very widespread in all countries of the region, especially when it comes to people coming from Muslim countries. The Balkans, ex-Yugoslavia, has a history of nationalist conflicts in which the movement of people played a huge role. We should not forget that in 2015, during the Great Exodus via Southeastern Europe to the West, to Germany, almost half of the people who arrived in West Germany actually came from the Balkans as well. This is because the region is poor and the region has not seen real economic progress in the last 30 years or so. So the best option which people have in the region is also to try to find a job abroad, especially in the European Union, especially in Germany and Austria. And there have been some legal openings for them. So this is still not sufficient, and quite a lot of people still work illegally in the EU, particularly in Germany, and come from the Balkans. So people are upset about the presence of foreigners. They are sort of pushed to this feeling also by the media, especially the yellow press, the tabloid press. And then they're looking for a culprit, and the culprit are the rich countries like Germany and so on, who at some point have accepted migrants and then stopped. So if you can't deal with your problem and you see that the big countries are having you as a kind of a buffer zone vis-a-vis the migration income, then this leads to an atmosphere in which there is a lot of xenophobia, a lot of fake news, a really unpleasant atmosphere.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I first want to say that we've seen both very strong anti-migrant sentiments amongst a minority of people, amongst Croats, Bosniaks and Serbs in Bosnia-Herzegovina, but we've also seen solidarity volunteering to help migrants in all parts of the country. So I think we have to be very careful with drawing fixed Peter, conclusions on that.
Peter, if I may interrupt you for a second, Peter.
Sure.
There are sets of opinion polls about the attitudes towards migrants, and the prevailing mood is not positive. What you have is exactly what you described, people supporting migrants, also because they have, many of them themselves, been refugees during the Yugoslav wars in the 90s and so on. However, these are poor people. Their ability to help migrants is limited. They live on 300 or 400 euro per month. So this is a difference between the rich populations of the West and the population of the post-Yugoslav countries who are still, to a great extent, impoverished and threatened by poverty.
I'm going to move on now because we've talked a lot about the problems, but of course we want to look at solutions. So what can be done right now to deal with this specific humanitarian crisis that we're talking about?
Yeah, I think there's no question that there has to be humanitarian assistance and that the people who are at the moment forced to sleep rough get access to shelter and food and medical aid and so on. I think there's broad agreement that this is a situation that is unacceptable.
In terms of the short-term solution, there is, as I entirely agree, there is no other way for Bosnia-Herzegovina to finding additional accommodation. I do not believe it will happen. It's very important to emphasize that. It's actually not because of unwillingness of politicians even to help migrants. But what has happened in the migration crisis in Bosnia-Herzegovina is symptomatic to the dysfunctionality of the political structures and system in Bosnia-Herzegovina. It's more of a symptom of the inability, unwillingness, and all sorts of other issues that are purely internal politics amongst the people that are in the central government or the different political parties, the central government and the local authorities, whether it's at the Federation, Republika Srpska level, cantonal level, municipal level. That complexity is played out in a way, if you want, on the back of the migrants. So I'm very skeptical that in the next couple of weeks, which is the period that we really need it, we will see additional accommodation being established after what we've seen happening in the past couple of weeks with the attempt to reopen an existing center in Biaş, the attempt to open a new center in Konich. So I think that the only thing that can be done, unfortunately, is to make sure that all assistance is provided to these people sleeping outside to avoid that people will die in the cold. It's really as basic as that. I really don't see anything else in the short term.
So is there nothing the EU and Germany can do for these people, apart from provide emergency assistance? That seems incredible.
Well, I mean, I think there's two things. First, I think it's really important to emphasize that the political capital that has been invested in the past period by the EU, by Germany, and also some other EU member states, in Bosnia-Herzegovina in particular, to try to work towards a consensus amongst different political layers on providing solutions has been very significant. But at the end of the day, unless local politicians agree, you cannot force people to do something. Secondly, there have been voices saying, well, you know, the EU should resettle people from Bosnia-Herzegovina to Germany or to other places. But I think there are two issues with that. The first question is why the people that are in Bosnia-Herzegovina, why should they be prioritized? There's a lot of people that might be in need of resettlement to the EU, and it's not entirely clear that necessarily the people that are in Bosnia-Herzegovina are the most vulnerable ones. But secondly, also, if you think away from the very short term to the medium term, once it becomes clear that it is faster if you want to be resettled to another EU member state from Bosnia to Greece, you're actually going to exacerbate the problem, because that is going to mean that a lot more people that are currently in Greece or maybe even in Turkey are actually going to try the route and come to Bosnia-Herzegovina to wait there for resettlement. So I think that discussion, beside the fact that I don't think it's politically feasible, I'm also not sure that that is really a solution for the challenge that Bosnia-Herzegovina faces today to deal with. Let's not forget, 8,500 migrants in a country of 3 million more or less. So,
does everyone agree with that?
Of course. However, exactly this situation is going to increase all hostilities which exist, not only in Bosnia-Herzegovina, but also in the surrounding countries like Serbia and Northern Macedonia towards the EU. The people and the political elite will simply continue saying that the EU is loading off its problems with the migrants at the doorsteps of the poorest countries in the region. It's not about money that should be delivered to the countries to provide humanitarian aid to migrants. It's about the core issue, and that the flow, the income of migrants, which is not being handled by the European Union in a way which is going to produce solutions. I don't know the solutions, but for the people in the Western Balkans, the solution cannot be that they will stay forever the place where the stuck migrants will remain.
I think I would agree as well. I also don't see any political room, for example, for an evacuation or a resettlement, or however you want to call it, to Germany or other European countries. We've seen the resistance of against resettling people from Greece and the Greek islands to other EU countries. And compared to that, I think that the situation in Bosnia does not stand much of a chance of being solved that way. But I do understand that from the point of view of the Western Balkan countries, they feel like they've gotten the short end of the stick, obviously, because after passing through Greece and or other European countries, the people are now trapped because they cannot move forward. And this is a very, not very attractive situation for Bosnia. I can understand that. But I don't think that exempts it from human rights obligations that are there.
Can I just add something on this? Because I think there is an assumption there that the politicians in the Western Balkans use, and specifically in Bosnia, which is just not true. People are not stuck there. Let's be very clear. The average stay of people in Bosnia-Herzegovina is somewhere between 2 and 4 months in the country. It's a rotating population. There are a few cases, families, most of them, I would say on top of my head about 300 people that I'm aware who have been there for a year and a half, 2 years, because they're waiting for additional money to move on. But the notion that people are stuck in Bosnia and Herzegovina is just not true. There is just not the understanding that, yes, we've had 8,000-9,000 people every day in the country, if you look at any given day in the past period, but these are not the same people. So people are not stuck there. The second point, I think, and that's where sometimes I think that the discourse of the EU maybe could have been more stronger. Listen, if you want to be part of the European Union and you are actually benefiting from being close to the European Union by receiving significant, I'm not talking about money from migration, now, by use it by receiving significant amount of money from the European Union accession funds, by having investments from the European Union in those countries. If you are benefiting from proximity to the European Union, there is also a relatively small cost to that. And the small cost to that is that you're an integral part of having to deal with the issue of mixed migration flows, irregular migration, which has been with the European Union, which will stay with us for the time to come, and which the Western Balkans countries will have to understand that this is part of being in proximity to the European Union. This is not going to go away. There is no magical wand that will somehow make that no more migrants are transiting through the Western Balkans countries. And I think it's very important not to pretend that there are going to be solutions where suddenly no more migrants will try their luck and go from Greece towards other parts of the EU using either Serbia or Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Of course, this is all part of a symptom, or it is a symptom of a broader long-term issue. What do you think Europe and Germany in particular can do to deal with this broader problem, really, at the EU's external borders, but also in the Western Balkan countries?
The situation, the political situation in the EU regarding asylum and migration seems to be in a dead end at the moment. It's mostly the countries, the border countries, the EU border countries and countries in the periphery of the EU that are basically left to deal with mixed flows of migration. But we've had new pact on asylum and migration being accepted by the EU Commission end of last year. And maybe that will provide us with a breakthrough in asylum and migration matters. Because at the moment, the situation, well, it's not very attractive for Croatia as well to accept asylum seekers. And it does not do that, as it seems, even if people want to move on. And there are no legal pathways for low-skilled labor migrants. So the people who are in Bosnia now do not have many choices apart from not migrating at all.
But you believe that the EU's migration pact does have a future to help solve this problem?
Well, I'm trying to be optimistic about it, although I'm not sure there's much optimism to be called for. The Visegrad countries, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland and Slovakia, have already criticized the pact for its mandatory solidarity rules and generally rules not being strict enough against migration. But I think there is probably no way around it. At the moment, it is the EU border countries that are left to deal with any kind of migration. And it's no surprise that they don't feel that is a very fair deal. So it is necessary that the other EU countries pitch in one way or the other. I'm not entirely optimistic that this is going to be solved and solved soon, but I am unfortunately rather certain that the pressure to do so will only increase. Now, with the pandemic and all the measures to contain it, we have seen economic problems in many countries all over the world, and I assume that the pressure to migrate will increase because of that. And as long as there are no other legal pathways apart from seeking asylum, I think that is the way people will go, with all the consequences we're seeing on the external borders.
Okay, so Nadine, that's your potential solution, but you're not optimistic, I think, if I'm judging your tone correctly.
Not much, and okay. I think it's going to take a while if okay. It's going to provide a solution.
Dušan, give me your thoughts for a solution and tell me, to conclude, whether you're optimistic or pessimistic about the future.
Well, I'm trying to be realistic, but for a moment I'll do a little bit of counterfactual thinking. And it's based on the premise that Europe is losing population fast. Germany last year, because of the pandemic, lost in the first half of 2020 40,000 people. So the populations are diminishing over all the place. So there is a demand for labor, especially for skilled labor in the EU, in the candidate countries for the EU as well. But what we see is that there is a strong pull factor in the EU towards the Balkans as well. In 2019, we had every 2 minutes, one citizen from the Southeast European six, from the Western Balkans, legally moving into the EU, 230,000 people. At the same time, you can't find people to do simple jobs in Serbia, in Bosnia, and so on. So I think that a bold move by the governments in the region themselves in Southeastern Europe and in Eastern Europe would be to look for ways to attract labor force also there. This could be something that could alleviate the problem to a little extent. But this is, as I said, more or less fantastic thinking.
Yeah, it's very brief. I just wanted to strengthen the point of legal labor migration. And as Dusan has said, through the Western Balkan regulation, there has been legal labor migration from the Balkan countries into the EU. And at the same time, there's a correlation of asylum applications from the Western Balkan countries decreasing at the same time. There is need for labor migration as well. And I hope that these facts will come together and political leaders will provide us with the frameworks for that in the future.
So, Peter, are you optimistic or pessimistic? And give me just a few bullet points about your possible solutions.
The solutions to this issue are not to be found in the Western Balkans. And I think I agree with what was said. The Western Balkans need to start developing an inward migration strategy, but I think politically speaking, we're very far off there. That's not even a point of discussion at the moment. But when it comes to the European Union, I think the difficulty is that you're having to do things that, put it in this way, the right doesn't like and the left doesn't like. The right doesn't like something that we need, which is more legal pathways for labor migration from countries farther afield. Doesn't have to be permanent, can be seasonal, can be all sorts of other schemes. But we need to have that because it is clear Pakistanis, Bangladeshis are going to Italy to work. They're not going for asylum. They go because there is work for them to do. What the left doesn't like is what we also need to do in Europe is to have a more efficient return policy. Migrants know very well that even if you apply for asylum in Europe, I think the average return rate of people that are given a final decision to leave the territory is somewhere around 30 to 40%. So people know that even if you do apply for asylum, you still have a great possibility that you can stay. So if you opening up these legal pathways has to go with ensuring that as much, and I know it's very complicated to do, with as much as possible returning people that even if you have a liberal regime, there will always be people that are there without legal grounds, and you have to deal with that. I think it is necessary to create some sort of democratic support for having more relaxed labor migration, for example. Am I very optimistic or pessimistic? I'm quite an optimist, so I'm relatively optimistic that we will find a way to deal with this, but it's unavoidably going to take some time.
Well, Peter, I'm very pleased we've managed to end on a slightly optimistic note. Peter's optimistic, Nadine a little bit pessimistic, and Dusan, you're realistic. Okay, so we have the whole spectrum here. Well, that's all for this week from the SWP podcast in Berlin. I'd like to thank our guests, and I'd like to thank you for listening. More information about podcasts, publications, and all our events can be found on the SWP website. And you can also subscribe to this podcast and others on SoundCloud and Spotify. But for now, it's goodbye from me, Damian McGuinness, and please do join us next time.